out there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 301. Yes, the 301st edition here at the Caffeination Podcast. We're calling this one the redirect edition here at the Caffeination. Not you know, the strange web filter rule or anything like that, but more along the lines of we're just taking a slight deviation from the standard content that you see here at the Caffeination Podcast every once in a while. On the last show, we talked a lot about places we've been and things like that. Today's show, we're going to be heading in a little bit more of a geeky direction. There's not too much new and interesting coffee news floating around. I'm not even going to lie to you. So I decided, you know, I'm not going to pull through the bottoms of the barrel for different things. I'm not going to talk about stuff that's either too complex or too watered down to be of interest to anybody. So we're just going to kind of go on a slightly different direction until that news source kind of fills back up. But I do have to tell you, there is an absolute ton of news coming out of CES this year. I mean, the Consumer Electronics Show is the biggest convention on the planet, so you'd expect there to be a lot of stuff coming out of it. The only problem is it's all about new TVs and this gadget that now does this, and it doesn't really seem to be the kind of interesting stuff that I would normally report on the Caffeination Podcast. So we'll see exactly what I've come up with. Hopefully you'll find a lot of this interesting. This is, of course, the Caffeination Podcast. We are the world of caffeine culture and technology news. We like to try and think of ourselves as the watchdogs of the internet. We try and find the absolute strangest stuff to talk to you about on the show, and hopefully you enjoy what we have come up for you today. This and all the other shows just like it, except with slightly different content, are all lovingly nestled over at www.caffeination.com. That is caffeination.com. Being that this is the Caffeination Podcast, we figured it'd be a good place to stick it. All right, on today's show, you're going to be hearing about any and all of the following topics: zombies, TVs, bloops, redirects, geek living, Loch Ness Monster, Blue Man Group, nerds, booms, bloops, joysticks, coffee, and Wii. Just realized I had bloops on there twice, but we're going to be talking about it a couple times, and it'll make a little bit more sense as we get on into it. Despite the name for today's show, this is not a show on how to apply 3-to-1 redirects to your web filters. This is not a way to move your content from one to another place seamlessly. If that is the kind of information you are looking for, please click on the absolute first link in the show notes. It's listed at the end of the sentence in case you found this episode and you're looking for how to do an actual 3-to-1 redirect. Then click here for a wonderful article on how to do just that. That sends you on over to a fantastic site called SEOMOZ.org, where they have a ton of search engine optimization and marketing tricks to play around with your websites. 301 redirects, for those of you who are not in the web design business, or those of you who do not run websites, there's basically a way for me to move content from place A on my site to place B, and for it to be seamlessly moved in your links and everything else. So if you were to click on a link that's, let's just say, 2 years old and you were trying to find an episode of the podcast, if I've moved it since then, I'm not talking just from, you know, one server to another, but I'm talking, like, let's just say the episode was listed at caffeination.com/podcast/episode1. If that was the URL to find it, and I've now since moved it to caffeination.com/podcast/episodes/episode1, this 301 redirect is a way for, even if a request comes in for the old URL, it'll point it right to the new one if I have it set up correctly. So if that's the kind of thing that you're interested in, please head on over to SEOMOZ.org and you can check out that little article on how to with that. We like to try and assuage all of the different geek souls that listen to this podcast. There's some people who are really hardcore geeks who really know exactly what I'm talking about when I say that kind of stuff. At the same point in time, we have a lot of other people who listen to the show who are interested in other things that are nowhere near related to that. So, you know, we like to try to make sure everybody's well and covered on this. I would, however, like to start off today's show by letting you know that the Caffeination is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Find all the information over at techpodcasts.com. All the shows have agreed to create child-safe, family-friendly, and educational shows. They are all listed over at techpodcasts.com. I highly suggest you head on over there and check them out. You got some really good stuff on over there. Specifically, two of my favorites right off the top of my head are the Totally Cool Tech Podcast and the Mike Tech Show. So there, you can go on over there and check those two guys out. I am like in three different places right now, I gotta tell you. My head is, I've gotten even less sleep this weekend than I do during the normal course of the week. I usually catch up on sleep a little bit during the weekends. But my son has woken up at least three times each of the past two nights, and it's just been It's hectic to say the least. And the funny thing is, we don't have anything to do this weekend. It was very nice and calming. So we were kind of looking to rest up, and it didn't quite happen. But before we get on into the rest of the show, and I'm not going to bore you with any other of that stuff, we did want to tell you a little bit about the contest that we have running right now. This is the 3-in-3 in honor of the 300 episodes in 3 years, which the anniversary of starting the podcast passed on the 9th of 2009. So on 2006, January 9th is when it was started. We will be doing a drawing on January 21st for a couple little prizes that we've organized together. One of the first prizes is from Buzz Strong Coffee Cookies. These things are fantastic, I gotta tell you. They're cookies that are made with coffee. They don't taste like, you know, that sounds at times. Like, every once in a while I'll say that to somebody and they're like, oh, you know, well, I'm not really a big coffee person. This tastes nothing like it. It's probably one of the most moist, cookies that you'll ever have. We're sending out boxes of these, and we also have a prize pack from over at weeklyroast.com. We're giving out a pound of fresh roasted coffee. I mean, absolutely, when you get contacted by the gentleman Ken over there from Weekly Roast, he will roast your coffee and then send it right to you. It's not sitting on the shelf somewhere. It's really an interesting little way to get your coffee. It's really the best way that you can go about getting your coffee. I mean, if you're a strict supermarket person, which there is nothing wrong with that, I highly suggest you give this kind of thing out try at least once to head that out. But anyway, the two links to the new prizes that we're offering are over at buzzstrong.com and weeklyroast.com. And if you would like to be entered into the 3-in-3 contest, please feel free to send me an email at caffeination@gmail.com. And all you have to do in the subject line of the email is put 3-in-3. That's it. I don't care if you add them together, if you multiply them, just put 3 IN and then the number 3 again. It's all up to you. I'm just trying to collect users to put all into a big virtual hat and then send it out. We need all the entries in by midnight on the 20th, so that way I can hopefully pick everything beforehand, because last time I tried to do it, I ended up messing things up, and I'd just rather have everything done before the show so I know going in and I can get, you know, people's names and everything all set up and set out. All right, so just remember, before the 21st of January, please send in your email to caffeination@gmail.com. It says 3-in-3 in the subject line, and you will be added in. It's not like you're going to get any spam or anything like that. It's all just for this contest, so please feel free to send that in. All right, diving right on into the Geek Cruft section here at the Caffeination Podcast. We changed the section up just because there's only one section on today's show. we didn't have enough to fill out the caffeine and food bits one, so we have a ton of Geek Cruft. All right, first up is a story coming out of CES about a new company called TrueMotion that has a way better than the Wii game controller. It's the same idea. Now, whenever you give somebody a Wii controller for the first time, they sit there like, oh, it knows exactly where it is in space. No, the way the Wii controller works is that it knows what direction it's moving and is approximately how fast. But what this controller setup does is it knows exactly where your controllers are, spatially speaking. So when you're moving it around, it, for instance, knows that not only is the controller moving forward at this distinct rate of speed, but that it started 6 feet back. It could tell if you were standing too far back from the TV or closer, or it's just a really interesting take on the whole concept. It's something that I had actually kind of wished that the Wii had really taken into account, because the Wii controller is very innovative, it's very interesting, but it has certain limitations, and there's certain types of games that are just really hard to play on it because it doesn't lack the fine control that you would expect in a game controller. So this kind of thing might end up making its way into the Nintendo Wii, but Nintendo's just printing money at this point. And I don't know if anybody else out there is kind of irritated at Nintendo. I mean, we got a Wii last Christmas, and they were in short supply. But this Christmas, they were in short supply as well. So that means for 3 Christmases in a row now, the Wii has been the it item. It has been in short supply, and they still haven't found a way to manufacture more of them. So it's definitely that they're restricting the demand on purpose. So I'm just a little bit irritated by it, because it's extending the issue that usually happens when a console is launched. I mean, my hat's off to them and their fantastic sales numbers, but at the same point in time, I'd really rather have a new it gadget next next Christmas. Just letting you know. All right, moving right along. USB 3.0 is announced and it has a new due date. It's going to be 2010. It is 10 times faster than USB 2.0. In other news, most people who are not incredibly technical did not know the difference between USB 1.1 rather, or in USB 2.0. The only good thing here is it's going to keep the same plug, so everybody is going to be happy. So even your old computer, as long as it had this standard USB plug, you're going to be able to run it. So that's really good. I have a feeling that the introduction of USB 3.0 is one of the reasons that Apple dropped FireWire. While I myself was a little bit miffed that they no longer support it, I kind of knew that it was going to happen because a lot of their iPods started dropping support for FireWire, even though Apple is, you know, basically the company that championed FireWire for as long as anybody can remember. So it's interesting to see the new specs coming out, and it's going to be incredibly fast. It's going to be completely backwards compatible with USB 2.0 and USB 1.1. So that means if you take any of the devices that you previously had and you plug it into one of these new slots, there's not going to be any problems at all. So that's going to be great. And not only that, but the Chinese government has declared that they're going to attempt to force all digital phone makers to use a standard USB connector for a charger. I would love this. Even if it comes out of China, even if it comes out of anywhere else in the world, if somehow they can manage to get all the phones in the US to use the same charger, you will make me a very happy geek indeed. All right, moving right along, we're going to cut it out. This is a interesting little design concept from over at yankodesign.com. I love their stuff. It's really kind of cool. But this is the finger scissors. It's a pair of steel rings that you would put in between your first and second finger on your hand, and as you open and close your fingers in the cutting motion, you would actually be able to open and close and actually cut some paper. So it's kind of an interesting little fun jaunt through design concepts, so I just thought I'd pass it along to you. Alright, moving right along, zombie TVs, a real problem that this group is tackling. Now, the idea behind this and the whole TakeBackMyTV.com little scenario and setup is that when the digital transfer takes place in February 17th, unless the president ends up delaying it, when this takes place, there's going to be two different kinds of TVs that are out there. There's going to be TVs that don't need that fun little converter box, and there's going to be TVs that do need that fun little converter box. And eventually, the TVs that do need that box are going to go the way of the dodo. They're going to be abandoned at an alarming rate. And the problem is there's a ton of toxins in these TVs, just like your old school CRT monitors. These things are going to be polluting landfills like there is nobody's business. So the people over at TakeBackMyTV.com have kind of tried to get a grassroots organization going up together. Allison B. Green, the reporter from over at TVTN, it's a an interesting little way that they're trying to get a little bit more recognition for the problem. They sent a group of zombie TVs to CES, and they did a dance for Thriller. Now, there's good things and bad things about this. First of all, it's a good thing because everybody's like, oh, hey, look, it's a bunch of people dancing around. They have TVs on their head, and let's see what they have to say. The bad thing is when you hear people from organizations like this talk, and I'm not talking about like the kitschy little news reporting and everything that they're doing, but when you hear the people, like the true spokesman for organizations like that, they all have a very similar tone, and they all have a very similar posture when they're actually talking to people. So if you are involved in a grassroots organization, you might want to do yourself a little bit of good and go to one of the meetings beforehand. I'm speaking from experience. I've been on different legislative committees and things like that, and there is a certain tone that a lot of different community organizers use. And the problem is when you have people who've been in legislation for so long, they don't know that they're doing it, but they end up tuning that tone out. It's not something that I can easily describe. It's just a certain way. It's kind of accusatory tone. They kind of say, this is your problem, this is your fault, and there's a way in which they go about detailing their problems, and it's not a whine, and it's not any kind of easily pinned down thing. But if you listen to enough people come up and give the speeches, you can kind of try and craft your speech in a way that it doesn't sound anything like that. You need to sound fresh, you need to sound passionate, and at the same point in time, you need to be concise, because the longer your speech goes on, quite frankly, the less they're likely to listen to you. I don't mean to be mean in saying this, I'm just trying to give people a little bit of advice if you're trying to get your voice out there. And the thing is that a lot of these community organizations, they give these really impassioned speeches, but they don't have have, they don't take the time to edit the content down, and they want to fit every little buzzword, and they want to fit every little very verbose description in there. I mean, trust me, I'm the hardest person in the world to kind of cull down my verbiage in any speech or anything that I give. So I'm really kind of speaking from experience here. So anything you can do to kind of cut it down and trim it out and get into a slightly different and slightly unique tone for the entire speech, I think you'd really kind of do yourself a little bit of justice there. So that's kind of like my little off-the-wall strange thing for the day. But the next little thing we have up here is another yet off-the-wall thing. NASA discovers a mysterious boom sound, or a roar if you want to call it that. I originally saw this from over at monsterbrains.blogspot.com. And the reason that I saw it is because the picture that they have there looks a lot like a character that Adam Sandler would play. However, the picture that they have there is H.P. Lovecraft, the original author of The Call of Cthulhu and a whole bunch of other different, very old school horror stories. They're calling him the Edgar Allan Poe of the 20th century, basically. His stories have a very, very visceral and very, very dark tone to them overall. And the funny thing is, NASA has actually detected a sound coming out of outer space. And here's the thing, they don't know what is making the sound. And they also haven't released the sound yet, which is kind of a little bit irritating. But they're saying it's not enough radio galaxies to account for the signal. It's not a primordial star, it's not a known radio source or anything. It is a deafeningly loud noise that has come from one of their radio telescopes. Now, when you listen to what is actually going into making these antennas, it's pretty insane. The antenna is actually suspended from a balloon in a suspension of liquid helium, which is as close to absolute zero as you can absolutely get. It's 2.7 degrees above absolute zero, which is -271 degrees Celsius, that to give you any kind of sense of how cold this is. The funny thing is, just imagine if instead of some deep space noise or anything like that, it was actually like a bird clanging off it or some other foreign object hitting off it. So I don't really know if that's even possible here, but if you should head on over there and read the story, because the stuff that they talk about and the different things that they say, it's not really something that I can explain quickly in layman's terms. So if that's the kind of thing that you're interested in, then I wanted to point you right along that. I also have the original article from over at monsterbrains.blogspot.com. And that kind of reminded me of another story that surfaced a while ago. This is a bloop sound. Rather than a boom, this was a bloop. Now, there are a series of underwater listening stations all around the world, and these things, sole job is to try and record deep sea sounds or deep channel sounds. Apparently there is a certain depth of water where no longer is the sound reflecting off the surface and no longer is it reflecting off the sea bottom, but rather it's sounds that are incredibly deep objects. So you have things like blue whales, ships, earthquakes, that's pretty much all that's down there. And the people who run it are the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. So they're the people who did the original study. Well, in 2002, they made a discovery that they could only call a bloop. The only way that is easy to describe this is if you're looking at radar sweeps and you see a blip, you'll see a bop and all these other sounds. These sounds are named after the things that they sound like. So when a radar sweep goes by and it makes like a blip, that sounds like a blip and that's what they list it as. This was a bigger sound than anything they had ever heard before. And for the longest time, I hadn't heard anything. I'd just seen the stereograms of the stuff. So I have the original article from back in 2002 from over at CNN.com, where they talk about, what these sounds actually are and everything. And it's really kind of interesting to see how many different things that they can hear. So for instance, you can actually hear a whale's sonar sound. That's what these are. These aren't like a radar sweep of the actual animal. It's kind of hard to explain, but it's the sound that the animal actually makes. So this sound was louder and deeper and bigger deeper, meaning physically deeper in the ocean than anything they had ever heard before. And it kind of spurred another author named Stephen Alton on to write his book called The Lock. Now, if you've never read a book like this, it's not necessarily horror, but it's more along the lines of Dean Koontz, or it's suspense. My father originally recommended I read it, and I absolutely loved it. It talks about a different explanation for what the Loch Ness Monster might actually be. And it might actually turn out to be somewhat true, which is one of the cool things about it. So I send you over to thelock.com for information on Stephen Alton's book, because I found it a fantastic read. I also have a link over there to the Bloop article on Wikipedia, and you can actually hear what the bloop sounds like. And I'm going to try and see if I can get it to come up here so that it sounds right. Now, this is the sound that is deeper than anything else, so let's just hope that this actually works. Alright, now for some reason the sound doesn't seem to be coming through very well, so it's kind of hard to explain it to you, but the sound that they have up on Wikipedia is very bad copy. You need to head on over to bloopwatch.org. And the funny thing about Bloopwatch is that they say that the actual sound originates from somewhere near the original coordinates of the H.P. Lovecraft thing, The Call of the Cthulhu. So it's been postulated that this might actually be the mythical beast that H.P. Lovecraft talked about. Now, the funny thing about some of the fiction that's out there is that you can really see how some of these things kind of come about. And even if he just picked a set of coordinates out of, you know, the blue, it'd be really kind of fun to see, you know, let's just say he picked, like, the coordinates for Cleveland. Does that mean anything weird that happened in Cleveland might be harbingers of his stories coming true? I don't know, but I just thought it might be fun to play around with. Now, I also do have a link over to the NOAA, or again, it's the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration homepage, where they have a list and a link that you can actually listen to all these different sounds. And the funny thing is, the bloop isn't the only unidentified one. This was originally heard in 1997. The time and frequencies are not identical between all of this, but they actually have them all named. So the bloop, Julia, train, slowdown, whistle, and upsweep. These are all different sounds that they have that they weren't able to identify. They couldn't say, okay, this is man-made, this is a air cannon, this is, you know, any one of hundreds and thousands of different objects which can make noise. And it's been postulated by some of the people out there that, you know, the bloop could be a giant squid. The only problem is it would have to be a different kind of giant squid, because there is no cephalopods like that actually have a gas-filled sac that would make some kind of noise like that. That was actually a physical noise that is on the tapes. So it's not just like a sonar thing and say, okay, this is something really big. This is something really big making a really loud noise, or something tiny making a really loud noise, but who knows. But really loud and really deep. So I just thought I'd pass it along because I thought it was pretty cool. And you can actually head on over to the NOAA and listen to some of the other sounds. And I got to tell you, it really kind of makes you feel a very, very small and puny when you listen to some of these things, because you really feel unbelievably alone when you listen to them. Because you have to think, these are recordings that are made in places that humans can't visit. So it's really kind of cool to play around with that. All right, next thing up here, if more grandmothers played video games, and as we get on in years, more grandmothers are going to have played video games at one point in time or another, then you might have something that was a little bit more like this. This is a Donkey Kong quilt, and you too can own your very own version of this from over at Carolina Patchworks. It's for $450. Now, they're saying that this is expensive. Now, I have seen what quilts cost, and really good handmade quilts can actually cost thousands of dollars. So $450 for a really nifty pixelated version of little Mario running around from a Donkey Kong style level. This is like the old school Donkey Kong, like the original game that was on the Nintendo. So it's really fun to sit there and play around with. To see, I wonder if there's going to be a bunch of other different geeky quilt designs that come up, because I really think the entire realm of 8-bit graphics is kind of ripe for quilting. It'd be kind of fun to see what people will come up with. You could have an entire level for Mario Brothers in quilt. I'm pretty sure it would take a while, but hey, quilting in general takes a while. Alright, thinking of what's old is new again, the joystick, which, by the way, I love the name joystick. I just think it's so descriptive. I think it's so neat when you actually look at it that the only thing that it's meant to do is it's meant to bring joy to your life. But this is like an old school, you know, video game. It's an Atari 2600 video game. So it's the joystick and the big red button on the side. That's it. That's the only thing that's in it. Well, the god among hardware modders, Ben Heck, has decided to take what's old and make it new again. He calls it the Atari 3600 stick. He has found a way to put enough buttons on this thing in very unobtrusive areas that it allows you to control an Xbox 360 with an Atari 2600 stick. So you can head on over to the link from Kotaku.com if you want to check that out. It's really kind of cool. I just thought I'd pass it along because I can't do justice explaining what it exactly does to you, but you can head on over there and check that out. All right, another little interesting thing to come out of CES was actually the Wild Charge charge pad is now actually going to end up being practical for certain gadgets. I love this idea. This is basically what looks like a sheet of aluminum foil with lines on it, and the way that it charges your gadgets is that you actually put different little clips on your gadget. So you put a clip that sticks into the charging port and it would wrap around the back. It's very flush with the device, so it doesn't really look like it would inhibit anything. And as long as you lay your device on the metal charging pad, it'll give your device a nice good charge. So I like that idea, and they also have a different little thing that allows you to swap out different battery packs for different phones. You can take the store-bought battery out and put their version of the battery in it. It has the different charging plates on it. So the charge pad's going to cost around $50, and each integrated pack is going to cost around $35. So it's still a little bit steep for most things, but you could definitely see this thing making it into like airplanes and stuff like that. So I just thought I'd pass it along. I thought it was kind of neat. All right, up next, a little bit of a political story I talked about on Twitter at one point in time, but the Nerd-in-Chief. Now, I love it when you find out that people you don't kind of pin things on are actually different. The only way to explain it is a while ago it came out that Vin Diesel, you know, the action hero, was actually a huge D&D fan. I mean, so much so that, like, there was a interview done, and they said, well, you know, what would happen if you were a paladin with all these different abilities and everything? He said, well, you know, the character that you described, you know, do I have this ability? Do I have that ability? It showed he actually had played the game enough to kind of understand the different intrinsic abilities of some of the different characters. But this kind of takes it to a whole different level. This isn't, you know, a direct quote or a direct discussion with anybody. But apparently Barack Obama's campaign staff put out 10 facts that you may not know about the soon-to-be president. And the number one fact is that he collected Spider-Man comics. Now, it doesn't have any kind of time frame. It might have been way back when he was a kid or something like that. But the fine folks over at Marvel have decided that, well, since he gave them a plug, they would give him one. So they have actually created a limited edition because everybody gets in on the limited edition thing now. And that's kind of irritating in and of itself. I don't like the fact that everything's a limited edition special run anymore. Because as soon as you make everything a limited edition, nothing really is. But I'm looking at it from his point of view. He has so many other things that he has to be thinking of, but this still has to be really cool. I mean, even if it was when he was a kid, he was collecting the comics. I mean, who wouldn't love to be featured in their own favorite comic book? I personally would love to be featured in X-Men or Batman. I mean, that would just be cool to me. I mean, Spider-Man's awesome and everything, but I identified more with the characters from the other two. But still, it's interesting. They have an interesting little storyline to go along with it, so you can actually head on over there and check that out. Or if you're a big comic book fan, you can pick one up yourself. Alright, moving right along here. We had the Nerd in Chief. Now we have a Nerd in Training. Flash cards gone horribly wrong. But at least she knows what a Triforce is. There's a cute little video up there of what appears to be like a one-year-old, maybe one-and-a-half-year-old little girl, and her father is showing her different flashcards of video game characters, and she's naming them. And she does really, really good. The video is about like 4 or 5 minutes long, and she goes through an entire huge list. The only problem with this, and this is coming from a complete, another parent who loves to have his kid do geeky things, but, you know, it's not really developmentally useful to her yet. She needs more of the work along with the shapes and the colors and everything, but, you know, it's nice to see that that she has the basics, and she can tell people like Simon Belmont and the Triforce and Yoshi and Goomba and stuff like that. There's obvious, you know, a little bit of prodding here and now, but I mean, hey, she's a tiny kid and she's able to recognize a ton of different little video game characters, so I thought that was kind of cool. Alright, moving right along, candid shots of stormtroopers. Now, this is people who dress up from the 501st, and there's all kinds of different shots over here. Like, there's a stormtrooper going down one of those static slides. There's a female stormtrooper with a bare midriff. There's a stormtrooper mowing his lawn on a riding tractor. I just think that the 501st is kind of an awesome little group, and to see some of the funny different things that they have there is just pretty cool. They have a stormtrooper actually grocery shopping, so it's actually two of them grocery shopping. I would love to be in the grocery store when these kind of things happen, so I just wanted to pass it along because I thought it was fun. Alright, the next little thing here, another little geeking out thing, is Transformers 2. The poster is out, so if you weren't unaware, the original Michael Bay Transformers now has a sequel that's going to be coming out. It's called Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, and it's a very basic teaser image. It's two red eyes with a bunch of plating on it, so there's no word yet on what the character is. Is it Jetfire, Megatron? Who knows? There's hundreds of different pieces of information that have yet to be released, so it's going to be kind of fun to see that. All right, moving right along, Blue Man Tech, one of my favorite groups to write anything by is Blue Man Group. I love having them on in the background because they're such rhythmic tribal music that it's really kind of good to lose yourself in the tone, and you can just kind of, like, you know, release whatever creative juices you have flowing and allow yourself to write. But I've also seen them at least three times. I think it was three times so far. And they put on a fantastic show. I saw them once in New York, once in Vegas, and once in Philadelphia, so it was three times. But it was three different shows each time, or one different show each time. So it just unbelievable showmanship on their part. And this is a little bit of a video on the tech behind Blue Men. It talks about, you know, the basics of the instruments that they use, like the PVC pipes and everything like that. So if you've never heard their music, the interview might not make entirely a whole lot of sense to you, but you should head on over to iTunes and kind of just check it out. They have a lot of free previews for stuff like that. All right, moving right along, the last little thing that we have for you here on the Caffeination Podcast today is the only coffee-related thing that I was actually going to do. This is a diamond-studded coffee cup by KPM. Now, I would not suggest that you actually need to buy this. This cup and saucer cost $41,035. I always hate when there's the zero in the middle. Like, it would be easier if it was like $41,135 as opposed to just $41,035. It just seems like there's something missing there. But that's neither here nor there. So this is a gold-encrusted, diamond-chipped coffee cup that you can get. It's by Limited Edition Design. I know nobody who's listening to the podcast is probably going to run right out and grab one of these. I just thought it was kind of fun to sit there and send the link over to it. It is a very nice cup of coffee, but I'm more partial to silver or steel than gold. So if anybody sees a nice steel coffee mug, that's probably something that I would rather have. All right, just a little bit of a reminder. Remember the 3-in-3 contest. Please feel free to send emails to caffeination@gmail.com with 3-in-3 in the subject line, and you two will be entered to win either a box of cookies or a pound of coffee. So it's going to be fun to play around with. Remember, the deadline is January 21st. This has been the Caffeination Podcast, episode number 301, the redirected edition. My attention was all over the place today. I'm trying not to yawn in your ear or anything like that. It's going to take a little bit of editing to get this episode up and out on time. Thank you so much for sticking with us. This has been a great run and a great show here on the Caffeination Podcast. Please feel free to drop by our homepage over at www.caffeination.com. Being the Caffeination Podcast, caffeination.com just feels like home. All right. Thank you so much for listening to this show and all the other shows that you happen to check out. We are a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All the other member shows are listed over at techpodcasts.com, and we are a proud Puzzle Piece production. To find out more about what that means, head on over to puzzlepiecepro.com. Thank you so much for listening, and stay caffeinated, people.